Chapter 136. Outside the private terminal at Václav Havel Airport, Heidi Nagel stood on the tarmac and felt the weight of the plan she had forced into motion. Asylum. It was the correct decision, she told herself. The only decision. Not far away, Scott Kerbel sat behind the wheel of the idling embassy sedan, its trunk loaded with duffels full of Sasha's hastily packed clothing and personal belongings. Sasha herself sat quietly in the back seat, still securely restrained in flex cuffs, looking dazed but calm as she played with the two Siamese cats in the pet carrier on the seat beside her. A small private jet emerged from the terminal hangar and turned toward them. It was the Citation Latitude on which Finch had arrived earlier. The pilots had received direct orders from the CIA director personally, commandeering a ghost flight for two unnamed passengers back to Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. No manifest. As Nagel watched the jet approach, she felt increasing trust in Director Judd. Even so, her years at the CIA had taught Nagel the perils of blind faith. In the world of national security, the bond of trust, even the deepest of loyalty, was routinely betrayed when the needs of the country outweighed the needs of a few of her citizens. Serving the greater good had a nobility to it, but Nagel had done her time. To cement her leverage, Nagel had taken four IronKey 256-bit encrypted hard drives from embassy storage, loaded each with a copy of Gessner's interrogation video, and locked each with a requisite 16-character passkey chosen tonight and known only to her. One of the drives was in her pocket, one was in her personal safe, and the other two were already sealed in diplomatic pouches en route to two attorney friends. One in Europe and one in the U.S., along with instructions that the pouches were to be opened only in the event of Nagel's untimely death or disappearance. A redundant double blind, dead man's switch. The wild card in this situation was Sasha Vesna, and the unusual condition that made her very difficult to predict or trust. The young Russian was in need of psychiatric care, to be sure, but with all she had endured in her life, she also deserved a home, friends, security, and a chance to live a somewhat normal life. Her protective alter personality had come forward only when people had harmed Sasha, and Nagel's plan revolved around avoiding that. I need to give Sasha a safe haven, she thought, as safe as possible under the circumstances. The ambassador felt eager to get Sasha airborne and out of Prague. Within the hour, a literal army would be landing from the U.S. airbase in Ramstein, Germany, to begin restoration of the blast site. As Nagel understood it, the debris in the crater would be pulverized using targeted micro-explosions and covered with a layer of poured concrete. Atop that would be a layer of gravel, followed by topsoil, and then sod. If all went to plan, within weeks, the lawns of Folimanka Park would look like they'd never been disturbed. Buried and gone, she thought. Only a handful of people would ever know Threshold had even existed. As the Citation taxied closer, Kerbel got out of the car and joined Nagel. Ma'am, Ms. Vesna seems quite content. Shall I load the bags? Thanks, Scott. Nagel replied. I appreciate your traveling with her. Obviously keep some form of restraint intact until you transfer her. The director's team will meet you on the ground and take over.
Of course, ma'am.
The director assured me he'll be there in person when Sasha lands. If you could please give him this? Nagel pulled the encrypted hard drive from her pocket and handed it to Kerbel. He'll know what's on it. Tell him it's one of four. And if he wants to confirm the contents, he can call me for the password.
Yes, ma'am.
Kerbel slid the drive into his pocket and turned to go. Actually, Nagel said, reconsidering. Better yet, just tell him it's the first letter of every word in his favorite Kissinger quote.
Kerbel looked bemused,
and headed off to get the bags. As Nagel walked toward the plane, she hoped Robert Langdon and Catherine Solomon were feeling more confident about their situation. They were both perfectly safe now, especially as one of the most powerful men in the country could not risk anything happening to either of them. Nagel had shared with Judd some of Catherine's thinking on TMT and the future, and he was so intrigued that he asked if Nagel thought Dr. Solomon might be persuaded to join the Threshold team. "No chance in hell," she told Judd, albeit in slightly more politic language, reminding him of everything Catherine had endured at the hands of the agency. Besides, she may choose to rewrite her book. Sasha Vesna often felt as if she'd awoken from a deep sleep and missed something important. Normally, days like today, with an unusually large number of blank spots in her memory, were unsettling to her. At the moment, however, despite remembering only murky snippets of the day's events, Sasha felt unusually at peace. Her inner voice, the one she had learned to trust, kept whispering that everything was going to be fine. Wonderful, in fact. Half an hour ago, Sasha had emerged from a thick fog to find herself restrained in the back seat of a warm sedan with Harry and Sally beside her in their carrier. A man in uniform was driving, and a woman who had introduced herself as the U.S. ambassador was in the passenger seat, turned fully, looking back at Sasha, and carefully explaining what was happening. Strangely, Sasha felt no panic at being restrained, nor to be in the sudden company of strangers. Instead, she felt prepared for this moment, her inner voice reassuring her that all of this was for her own benefit and safety. The ambassador had apologized for the handcuffs and the rushed departure, offering a detailed explanation. Sasha had understood very little, something about an opportunity for political asylum, State Department regulations, flying over international waters, but none of it mattered to her. All she heard was one thing. "I'm going to America." The voice in her head urged her to be thankful and cooperative, but Sasha did not need to be told. Going to America had been Sasha's fantasy since she was a little girl, losing herself in romantic movies. She wondered if someday she might even make it to New York City to see Central Park, Katz's Deli, and the Empire State Building. Exactly how all this had transpired, Sasha was unclear, and she wondered if maybe it was related to all the diligent work she had done for Dr. Gessner. All Sasha knew for sure was that the U.S. ambassador had made it possible.
"She is someone I can trust," Sasha sensed, "a new friend."
Sitting alone with her cats in the warmth of the sedan, Sasha waited for the cobwebs to begin clearing from her mind. She watched the Marine load her bags into the plane, and she realized there was nothing left for her in Prague anymore. Without Birgitta, Sasha had no job, no place to live, no— Sasha suddenly flashed on the other thing she was leaving behind. Michael Harris.
"I never said goodbye."
Strangely, her memories of Michael seemed to be dissolving with startling speed, as if he were already a lover from her distant past.
"First loves are important," she recalled a romantic movie once saying, "because they open our hearts for what's to come." But what is to come?
Sasha wondered, sensing for the first time in her life that she was entering a world of limitless possibilities. The quiet voice was again whispering within her mind.
"Don't question your past, Sasha," it told her. "Look toward your future."
The voice was one she heard often. According to Michael, it was her own intuition, her higher self, her subconscious. Everyone had a voice within, he assured her, a part of one's soul that whispered, reassured, and guided. Sasha would write Michael a letter once she got settled. Then again, maybe it was just best to let it go. Recently, she had experienced a sense that they might be nearing the end of their romantic connection. "Ms. Vesna," a voice called outside the window. The Marine had returned and opened her door. They're ready for you. He unstrapped her seatbelt and helped her out of the car. Then he reached back into the car and gently lifted out the pet carrier. Let's get Harry and Sally settled on board, shall we? She nodded appreciatively.
Thank you, sir.
You can call me Scott, the man said, glancing over with a smile. I'll be flying with you today. Shall I call you Sasha?
Of course, she exclaimed, feeling a rising excitement as they neared the jet.
At the bottom of the staircase, the ambassador stood alone, apparently waiting to say goodbye.
Sergeant Kerbal, the ambassador said as they arrived, perhaps you could get those two fine felines out of the cold and then come back for Miss Vesna.
Absolutely, ma'am, he said, carrying Harry and Sally up the stairs and disappearing into the cabin. The ambassador studied Sasha with concern.
I know this is all very sudden and a lot to absorb. Are you okay?
Sasha was trying to hold herself steady in an unexpected rush of gratitude, bewilderment, excitement, and disbelief. The ambassador had repeatedly promised that everything would begin to make more sense in the coming days. She also promised to join Sasha very soon in the United States, a thought that brought Sasha a deep sense of tranquility.
I'm okay, Sasha managed. Still very foggy, but I know you've been so kind to me.
She was suddenly on the verge of tears.
How can I ever thank you?
The ambassador looked emotional now, too.
Believe it or not, Sasha, you already have.
As Sasha broke down, the ambassador stepped forward and gave her a long hug that reminded Sasha of the hugs her mother used to give when she was only 4 or 5. Before she was a damaged girl. Sasha had not been hugged like that in many, many years.